Hello and welcome to the Let's Talk Attachments podcast. My name is Jessica Da Silva and I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and an attachment coach helping adults end their unhealthy dating patterns and create stronger, secure relationships. I created this podcast as a platform to answer your questions and dive deeper into different aspects of each attachment style. I also share personal insights and stories in order to help you make sense of what you are experiencing. So please listen with an open heart and an open mind. Without further ado, let's get into it. So before we dive into today's podcast episode, I am thrilled to finally announce that enrollment for my Secure Self Academy for the Fearful Avoidant Attachment Style is now available. So if you've been waiting patiently for this moment, this is your time to shine. This 8-week self-paced e-course is for the fearful avoidant who wants to feel more secure within themselves and their relationships, who wants to have more control over their emotional experiences, to feel more stable and grounded in who they are and what they want, and who wants to have the tools to manage their relationship anxieties when they surface. If this sounds like you, this online course will give you the actionable tools to guide you on your journey to becoming your most secure self. So to learn more and sign up, you can visit the link in the show notes. So this is a special episode. One of my former coaching clients, Megan Kelly, was willing to share her story here on the podcast with having a fearful avoidant attachment style and her journey to becoming more secure. My hope is that her experience can inspire you to believe in yourself and your growth. So without further ado, let's get into it.
Hi, Jessica. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I know, me too. So just an introduction, Megan is a badass. She wasn't expecting me to say that. She's a badass.
I was not, but I'll take it.
She's an attorney. She's a yoga teacher. She is into self-development and growth, which are two things that I'm super into. So, and she's also a former client who has gone through the 8 weeks of this attachment coaching program that I have, and we just connected, and she's just so insightful and has so much to talk about and share on attachments, as she, you know, just has this experience of having a fearful avoidant attachment and learning to become more secure in the process. So I just know that this knowledge will be really helpful for anyone who does have an insecure attachment, whether it is anxious or fearful avoidant or dismissive, and you are just wanting to have hope in the fact that you can be more secure, you can change, and just kind of maybe some steps on how to get there, some guidance. So thank you again.
Thank you. And you are also a badass. My gosh.
Oh, thanks. You're so sweet. All right. So first, Megan, where did you learn about attachment styles? Where did you hear about this?
Oh my goodness. I think probably was on your email list and learned about it from you. And I think I read the book. I'm forgetting the author of the book. You can probably
Attached by Amir Levine. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I read the book and I really thought I was anxious attached, which I am. But reading the book for me, I have to be honest, I don't know if I read the whole book or I just kind of skimmed it. I'm just being honest. The concepts didn't really sink in for me. So I knew there was something to it because I could identify pieces of myself in it. I really just considered myself anxious attached and was like, okay, that's cool. I don't know what I can really do to change this, but And then as I picked up that book for a reason, right? Because I was having issues in my relationships, issues in quotes. I mean, I was not having relationships where I felt like I was seen or I felt like I was fully seeing the other person. And I think I was dating someone earlier this summer, and that's when I reached out to you because right. it didn't work out. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I don't know what's wrong with me, what's wrong with all of these people I'm attracted to. So that's how I got here.
Yeah. And I remember you specifically saying, I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Like, yeah.
In our consultation.
No, I really did it. Yeah. And I really thought, I was really kind of embarrassed about it because, like you said, I'm a yoga teacher. I read up on mindfulness, and I feel like a lot of that and a lot of those concepts are kind of imbued in attachment work. So I thought I could just figure it out by myself. And I was like, what is wrong with me that I don't understand? And it would just be like every new person I would date, I'd be like, okay, now I got it. Oh no, wait, now I got it. And it would always kind of just end up in the same patterns, the same way. And I don't know. Yeah. I just didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting too, that you say that, you know, you thought you were anxious attached, because in that book Attached by Amir Levine, he only talks about three attachment styles. He talks about the anxious, the avoidant, and secure. He doesn't mention fearful avoidance. So a lot of people are unaware of that other category. So
that's,
it's like,
yeah.
Yeah. So that's one thing with that book. That's a little, tough, because people aren't aware of the four different attachment styles. So I always suggest doing more research. There's another book too, The Power of Attachment, I believe it's called. I'll link it to the show notes, but it talks about fearful avoidant attachment.
Yeah. Can I just be real for a second?
Oh, please.
I kind of feel like if I read that book and I read about avoidant, I was like, well, I'm definitely not that. Like, I feel like there is this, maybe this is just me, there's like this stereotype around avoidant people that, like, I don't know, that they're not good partners, or like they're not, they're super turned off all the time, or they're super like, they just want to be in their own world. They don't really want to be like, avoidant are like, avoid relationships with them, like red flag, like avoidant. And like somehow anxious is like, oh, well, you're just like, you really just want to be in this relationship, and like you have all these needs, and like, I don't know, somehow I think when you brought up to me that I could be fearful avoidant, I was like, no, that's not me. I'm not that. And there was a lot of judgment around that, that I had to work through.
Yes.
You were like, yeah, I think that's you. And that's kind of what your work is to accept. And also the frustration for me also was like, I have two attachment styles.
Yeah.
Like, really? Like, I was like, oh, extra layer of
something to work on.
With me. Yeah. I was like, what was wrong with me? But no, there's two.
Either way.
attachment styles. But it made so much more sense as we worked through it. But
yeah. And the reason why, because so with the fearful avoidant, for those that just need more clarification, you have tendencies of both anxious and avoidant aspects to yourself. So I like to call them the rebels of the attachment styles, because there's no consistent way of operating in love or making decisions or just relating to things in general. You'll go from anxious to avoidant, hot and cold. There's just no consistency sometimes. And with the fearful avoidant piece, especially, is that there is trauma around betrayal. There's trauma around trust, right? So your caregivers were the source of comfort, but they were also the source of fear, right? Like, I don't know what to expect from them. I don't know how they're going to react, or if I can fully trust them to meet my needs right now.
Right.
So that's when you were talking about your experience, I was like, okay, these are the things that I'm noting, right?
Right. Right. And then those patterns for me were reinforced in relationships.
Yeah.
So I think the biggest thing for me when I really realized that I was a fearful avoidant was like, I really didn't feel safe in relationships. Like, relationships were not something that I felt safe in. And so as soon as things would get more, like would advance or like get more serious, like I would be like, okay, not okay. Like I would pull back. And I don't even think I realized that I was doing that, but it was just like a protective mechanism that I had. And
totally.
I really did want relationships. I really did, but it would be like finding and nitpicking those little things to use that as an excuse in a way. And not to say there aren't real reasons why
right.
you shouldn't get serious with someone. But for me, it was like finding those things to justify my fear of being in a relationship where I didn't think I was going to feel safe because I'd never felt that before. Like I didn't think that was possible.
Interesting.
So that's where the light bulb kind of went off for me, that I was like, oh yeah, this is fearful avoidant.
Yeah. So in that experience, I hear definitely the fearful avoidant because of that, just that mistrust, right? That you have that fear around people's motives and intentions and what's actually going to happen, but also the avoidance of how you would maybe find flaws or ways to get out of it, or just kind of write them off for whatever reasons, but because internally you were experiencing fear, right? You're experiencing uncertainty. So where does the anxious aspect of you come in? Because you have this capacity to love, and you're empathetic, and you are sensitive and attuned, which is, you know, usually avoidance, they aren't as attuned or like hyper aware, hyper vigilant of things. You are. So where does that come out? And when does that come out, do you think?
I feel like I notice it like leading up to that point where I'm looking for the thing that's wrong and like about to back up. I'm like, oh my gosh, you haven't texted me in 2 hours. Like, what's going on? What did I say? What did I do wrong? Oh my gosh, like you walked in the room and your face, something's wrong. Yes. I did this wrong. Yes. What can I do to fix it? So I notice that more about myself in relationships because I don't know, maybe I thought that that was the reason that I would pull away from people, but it was interesting for me to recognize that I had these like two polarities of things going on, because at the same time, I could flip to the other side and be like, oh, you didn't text me for 2 hours. Okay. Next time you text me, I'll wait 24 hours, you know, like protest type behaviors.
Right.
So it's lots of complications. Yeah. It's like, it's, but definitely I do have more just generally like people pleasing tendencies. And I also am just super attentive and aware of how people show up in the world and like, what can I do to like, make sure they're okay. I feel like that's more of my anxious style, but it's interesting how they interplay.
Yeah, it is. It's like this constant dance, right? It's so hard just to have that sense of stability.
Right. And it's also hard to not think that, oh, like that's how it is. Like that's how relationships are, like that's how I'm supposed to be in a relationship. Like that's my role, is to like, you know, be super attentive and be constantly, for me, it was like more interested in the other person's needs than my own needs, and just have no clue about my own needs. Like, no clue even how to articulate my own needs, which you helped me through the coaching process, and actually probably would help with a lot of my protest behaviors with fearful avoidant attachment style, being able to just speak to my own needs and understand that certain things are going to be triggering for me because of past relationships and whatever. So yeah, it's a lot to unpack, but at a certain point, I realized there's no turning back. It's like, you can't, like, this is who I am, right?
Yes, like, I love that. This like, is who this I am.
This is who I am. And it's either I'm just this undateable person, or I'm just like never going to be in relationship with other people, which I don't want that for myself. Or I'm going to start to unpack this and understand myself and build a sense of security within myself. Yes. That was the biggest thing, I think, that I didn't feel. I definitely didn't feel I had. I didn't feel safe in relationships, and I also did not feel safe in my own choices, in myself. Like, I just did not trust myself at all.
Yeah. And that is like the biggest thing that I hear with people, especially with insecure attachment styles, is because you never, either your needs weren't nurtured, they weren't talked about, they weren't really encouraged or met when you were younger, especially, you don't know what your needs are going through life. So it's like you go through conflicts, you go into relationships not knowing what your needs are and just hoping that people know what you want. And it's right. Like, that's a recipe for disaster, because mostly not. They're not really going to know what you need unless you communicate it. And then there's all that frustration and confusion that happens. And then it's like breakups left and right. So it's understanding what your needs are. And when you can understand your attachment style, there's a framework that says, like, there's studies that have shown, you know, anxious attachments have these types of needs. Fearful avoidance have these types of needs. Dismissive avoidance have these types of needs to feel safe and secure in a relationship. And I love that you said it was first learning to create that safety and security within me by first understanding myself. Because when I can understand myself, I can feel safer within myself. I know how to meet myself. I know how to support myself. And then I can show others how to support me, because I know how to communicate that now.
Yeah.
Like, that's the work.
Yes, know? That's the work. And then also realizing that everybody else is doing this too. I remember the session where you said, we're all just wounded children.
Yes.
And I literally have never, I've never forgotten that, because I'm just in your everyday interactions, you can see how people show up. And it just puts a totally different frame on it when somebody's coming at you either upset or anxious or hurt. And you're like, I don't really get why this is a big deal. Or like, I don't, or like, what right do you have? Like, it's just like, wait a second. We're all wounded children just walking around in this world in adult bodies. Not that that excuses behaviors that are inexcusable, but it does help you like have a frame of reference for not accepting that kind of behavior, but just being able to take a pause and be like, okay,
yeah,
there's something. This is not completely about me. It may be something I did that triggered this, but there is something else going on with this person. And just being able to understand that has been huge for me.
Yeah, totally. It helps you just have more compassion for people.
Yeah.
Understanding that, okay. And yeah, and I love that you pick, like, there's just some things from sessions that you just that stay with you forever. And I love that that was the one that stuck with you. And that's really, for people that don't really understand that, it's, you know, we're all operating from these, you've probably heard of like inner child work. So it's these versions of ourselves, and they can be different ages, that were never really evolved. They weren't really nurtured aspects of ourselves. They call it these aspects of ourselves, like our wounded inner children, because they were never healed. Right? They experienced these traumas and it wasn't ever worked through or processed. So we're all operating from these unhealed places, which is why you'll see like 70-year-olds acting like 3-year-olds, you know, it's just, and that's everywhere. It's all of us adults acting from these different versions. So yeah, it is really interesting. And yeah, you can have more compassion for people as opposed to like taking it so personally, which we do. When we have an insecure attachment style, we take everything personally.
It's all about me.
It's all about me. What did I do?
Right. What did I do? How can I fix this? What's wrong with that other person that they don't recognize me or see me for who I am?
Yeah.
It's very self-focused.
Yeah, it totally is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it makes sense because it's all like, it's how do we survive? It comes back to those. Right. And attachment theory is an evolutionary approach. And it's really about, okay, how can I survive in this moment? What do I need to do in order to get this person to love me or to validate me or to, you know, validate my existence? So it is, yeah. Everything is revolved around us. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I know that was really big for you when you were like, oh my God, why is this all about me?
Right. And that, and figuring out that I was a projector for human design. Yes. And I had like every center open, but two things, and just.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, so that's something
for so sure. Much.
Human design, you guys, if you haven't, I think I talked about this on another panel. I love it. I've talked about this on another podcast. Human design is all about like your energy type. It's about like the energy of your personality. And that also can give you so much insight into why you are the way you are and how you operate in the world. So Megan really liked
I loved that. It. Yeah. Just because it made so much sense for me as to like why I felt so exhausted in interpersonal, like not even just romantic relationships, just like interpersonal relationships, period. It just made so much sense. I have very easily take on other people's energy, and I knew that about myself, but it's a helpful framework for understanding why that is. And again, like accepting the humanity of myself. Yes. And being like, why am I like this? Why is this way?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I think it's always so important to just talk about different approaches, you know, whether you're into astrology or human design or whatever school of thought, you know, that is calls to you. It's just another way to understand yourself. Like,
exactly.
Why not? You know,
it's just a tool like everything else. It's not like it's the be all. I don't believe any one tool is the be all end all, but I feel like certain ones resonate more than others for particular people. And if it's helpful, then why not check it out? Why not use it? So
sure. And talking about like you being just more sensitive and empathic in general, how did that, if you don't mind just touching on your past a little bit with just how you formed this specific attachment style, where do you think that came from in terms of your family and your relationship?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so I grew up in a household that was like very loving, very supportive. I had a lot of siblings. I had three siblings younger than me, and we were all around the same age. I grew up in a household that had substance abuse in it, and I grew up with one parent kind of being more checked out for that reason than the other. And so for me, being the oldest child, it became really trying to anticipate, I think, what other people's needs are. And I guess that's where my empathy came from, because there was really, and I don't think this is what true empathy is, but I think what I was trying to do was kind of just keep the ship afloat, basically, because there was often a lot of circumstances that would change really rapidly. Things were out of control when I just wanted to have them be in control. And it was hard. I mean, it was really hard. And I don't know how other people in my family interpreted the situation internally, like we've talked about it, but just for me, it showed up as a lot of trauma. I mean, it was a lot of trauma, and it helped me feel more empathy because
so just letting you guys know that Megan lives by a fire station, very tiny town with like two fire stations or something around her, so it goes off, and she's just
hitting. So sorry.
It's okay.
The alarm going off. I was like, don't talk about this. Don't go there. Don't go there, Megan.
I really want to check out your town. Now I just have this like visual of what this little town of yours is like.
Suburban town outside of Philadelphia. But today the fire alarm,
there's a party
four times in one day. So
yeah, lots going on.
Anyway, I think I was saying through those experiences, I think I developed more empathy for other people because it was an experience where I felt kind of really alone in the experience. And it made me realize like, wow, you really never know what's going on in somebody's world, because on the surface, everything looked fine, but it wasn't. And I think those were definitely the reasons why I have the attachment styles that I do. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot more work to do around it. I'm not gonna act like I'm completely over that situation. I think, like we were joking, you give homework during the sessions.
Yeah.
And we started calling it life work because it was like, there's no way you can do this in like a week. And for me, it's just been kind of accepting that. And then also just accepting that it's an important way that I show up in the world and can see other people and their humanity through this experience. So in a way it's a gift. It's sort of a twisted gift in that no one ever wants that to be part, but of their past, but also like the healing process is a gift.
Yeah.
And it's not linear, and it twists and turns and you learn more things and and that was part of my resistance to honestly doing some of this work, because I had a feeling that that was connected to why I was having trouble in relationship. But when you've experienced trauma, you don't really want to go there. You don't really want to go there because it doesn't feel safe. So I'm really grateful for just having you as a support system and for being willing to work through it with me in a really supportive way, because it's hard to talk about, and it's hard to really want to bring up those things again. And so I think you really did it in a delicate way where I wasn't like rehashing a lot of very specific memories, but also just sort of acknowledging like, yeah, like this happened. And like, this is maybe related to why you're showing up with these attachment styles. And for me, it honestly was like a huge weight off of my shoulder. It was like, okay, like, this wasn't just you that did this. Like, there were reasons, and like having the ability to understand that better, it's more a relief than anything else, and just has enabled me to feel like, okay, I can continue to work on this, continue to work through this, and just be compassionate toward myself, like we were saying earlier, and just accept a little bit more around why I am the way I am, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And like I remember during some of those sessions where it was a little nerve-wracking to talk about some of these things. I think there was one session where we're going into shadow work, I believe it was. No, it was reparenting.
Oh, yeah.
And inner child work and really learning how to, and going into, you know, using that visualization and just meeting that inner you.
Yeah.
That was her. And how do we comfort her? And I remember that session.
Right. And like, you, and I actually remember early in the session, I was like, I'm not doing self-parenting work. And you're like, that's part of the program. I was like, I've never been able to like, just on my own, you know, like find exercises online where you work. Like I really, for me,
it's hard to do that on your own.
It's so hard to do that on your own. And I think if you have a history of trauma, like I really, I can only speak from my personal experience. Like I'm not a therapist, but I just feel like doing it like the way you did it. That wasn't our first session, right? Like we went through the secure self, we went through needs, we went through so much in order for me to feel safe. to even go there.
Interesting.
So yeah, I was very resistant to even want to think about that scenario. And like I remember telling you, I don't even think I trust myself as a parent to myself. I feel so sort of unsafe in the, not that I've made terrible choices in my life, but I just don't find relationships to be a place of safety. And so how can I provide a stable parent-child relationship mm-hmm. to myself or to my inner child? But that's where the work is. Like that's, mm-hmm. it's often the stuff that you don't want to do, unfortunately. And for me, it has been extremely helpful to think about the ways in which my inner child is getting triggered in any given situation. Because in most instances, if I'm upset or I'm let down, it's like, I'm like, okay, yeah. Like that's an inner child. That's inner me, like coming out as a child, feeling abandoned or feeling just alone or feeling overwhelmed. And that's to me, it's been really eye-opening for me. So
you mentioned, and I so like some of those internalizations that you mentioned, because when things happen to us when we're younger, right, like mm-hmm. we don't have a proper filter, right? It hasn't been fully developed yet, so we're internalizing these things as they are. So when you, for instance, just with the chaos that was going on in your household, you mm-hmm. felt this responsibility to like maybe take care of mom or to take care of dad. And if you didn't do the best you could as like the 5-year-old or however old you were that you were at that time, mm-hmm. you internalize that as I'm not good enough, or I could be doing better, or like what were some other things that kind of some other internalizations that came up for you that you're currently working on reframing now as an adult?
Yeah. Like I think you hit on the biggest ones, like if I could be a little more perfect, like I could rectify this situation. You know what I mean? Like if mm-hmm. I could, you know, act a certain way, if I could break the code, like it ultimately, it's hard in those situations to not make it about the things that you're doing wrong, when really as a child in those situations, it's not about you, but you so want to fix it. You so want to make it right. And yeah, I just thought if I tried a little harder, I could make it work. If I just kept trying.
Yeah. And another thing you mentioned too was overcoming this perfectionism, which mm-hmm. I'm sure was something that you kind of adopted when you were younger. Okay, if I'm perfect, then things will be better. If I'm perfect, then people won't go through pain. If I'm perfect, then, you know.
Right, then everything will be fine.
Will be fine.
And it'll be normal. And the biggest thing for me to reframe was just accepting my humanity. Yes. Like that was the biggest reframe for me, was just, okay, I'm a human being. And that really, I mean, I think perfectionism ultimately is a way we kind of delude ourselves into thinking that we'll never have to experience pain again if we just get to this unachievable point. And then when you do everything perfect and then stuff still happens, you're like, what gives? Like, what do I need? And it just becomes this exhausting cycle, because you can't, there is no perfect, and you're just in a constant cycle of self-doubt and blaming yourself, which doesn't help you. It doesn't help the people around you. And the hardest thing is to sort of let go of that framework, that perfectionist framework that you've built a sense of security and safety around. Like that's your secure, that's the place where you feel safe, right? Is by telling yourself, okay, well, I'm going to do this and this and this and this and the other thing, and then this is going to happen. And then it doesn't happen. And you're like, okay, reframe. I'm going to do this, 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 and this. and then this will happen. And it doesn't, and it's just, it gets to the point where it's just unsustainable. You can't do it anymore. You have to let go of it a little bit, but it's not like snap your fingers, you know. It is still not snap your fingers. For me, it's really an awareness of, okay, I'm doing this because I think that this will make me more perfect. How can I have a little bit of compassion for myself now? How can I step away from this and recognize that I'm a human being and
totally
I have needs. I have things that I need to work on too. No one's perfect. And you wouldn't want to live in a world where everybody was perfect, right? Like, I mean, that's also what makes us interesting people, right? Are the things that are a little bit quirky about us, the things that are different, our experiences, the way we relate to other people in the world. Like, for me, that's been helpful too. It's like, okay, well, even if I were perfect, like, would I even like myself? Right. Like, would I even like, would right. people even like, let go of if people would like me, but would I even like myself? Like, what even would that look like?
Yeah. Like, well, you wouldn't know anything other than that. So it's just like, there's no polarity. There's no contrast. It would just be this very like bland, linear experience.
Right. And another thing that was so helpful that you said during our sessions, which I feel like I intuitively knew, but you saying it really helped, was that a lot of times in that perfectionist mindset, in the insecure attachment styles, you think of things as black and white. It's like this
as
or that.
That.
It's
up.
Like, I am perfect or I am terrible. Yeah. I am the best person or I am the worst person. And it's when you said nope, like it's the gray area. Like, and it's so true. It's like, it's both and. It's the gray area. It is the messy middle. And we don't want that. Like I'll just say, I don't want that. I want it to be like, I did X and this is good. I did that or so-and-so did that. And that is bad. And you are off my list now because that is bad.
Yeah.
But so often it's much more nuanced. It's pretty much always more nuanced than that.
Yeah.
But,
and I love that you said that, Megan, the gray area. That has just been a theme in everything because you're right. If you have an insecure attachment style, and this is any insecure attachment style, we tend to see things in black and white, and that's just for survival purposes. That's so we know who is bad and who is good so we can protect ourselves. But if you're secure or you're learning to cultivate more secure attachment, you're better able to navigate that in between, that gray space that lies uncertainty, that lies risk, that lies humanity in general, and entering relationships with uncertainty and dating and all these things that kind of can cause us some pain, right? That takes risk. When you can create that safety and security within yourself, you can better navigate that gray area because you accept your humanity. So you can better accept other people's humanity as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it can feel, because when you said that, like the gray area, like that can feel destabilizing for somebody that feels like, oh, well, that my whole life I've only looked at things this way or that way. But the anchor is, you're the anchor.
Yeah.
Like once you get that down, that you're the anchor and you really believe it, like you don't just like, you know, sort of like, okay, yeah, I know, like I need to like believe in myself and yada yada. And like, but when you really believe that like you're your own anchor, like then the gray area is like, okay, well then I go with the tide, I navigate. And not that you don't get upset with things like that, that doesn't change, but you have an anchor point to come back to. Right. It's like this constant, like coming back to yourself. So,
yes. Oh my God. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And also, too, like if you didn't learn tools to navigate the gray area, then of course you're not going to want to swim. Right. No. Because you don't know how to swim.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't want to be like dropped in the middle of the ocean and being like, okay.
Right. Like, okay, what am I supposed to do here? You
know? Right.
So that's right. Why it's like, whether you're, you know, reading books, just learning about yourself, seeking support, whether it's through coaching, therapy, like whatever it is, learn the tools to better understand yourself, learn tools to manage your anxieties, to understand people, to understand your emotions, to control your emotions if you need to. Because that's how you can best navigate the gray area that is life. Like, that's life, right?
Right. And have a lot of self-compassion for yourself while you're doing it.
Totally.
I think the biggest thing for me was just also just giving myself the credit for even showing up. I'm like, okay, I'm here. Maybe I'm just going to, you know, do journaling today for 5 minutes, like, or maybe I do it for 1 minute, but I'm going to try today.
Yeah.
I'm going to put myself in a position where maybe I figure out one new thing, or I explore one new thing. It's so hard to want, I feel like in self-development work, we just want the result really badly. And of course, that's okay to want a certain result, to want to feel better, but the process isn't linear, and it takes time, and you feel like you get somewhere and then you feel like, oh gosh, like I took a couple paces back, but once you can kind of accept that that's part of the process and like, yeah, like I'm here, I'm in it. I'm doing this work. I'm doing it. Right. Like, and that's a success in and of itself, no matter what result you want to achieve. It's like, okay, I'm here. I'm in this.
Yeah.
I'm sticking with myself.
Yeah. And I think that's why, like, this is such a beautiful process because, which is different from when I did therapy, I would never be this vulnerable and open with clients. But right. I think this is the process where it's like, okay, yeah, I'm teaching this stuff, like actively putting this in my life, but I am going through this journey with you. Like I have my own life that I'm like every day confronting these things and working through it and falling short and showing myself compassion in the process. So I think it's so important to show that vulnerability to you and normalize these human experiences because that's what we need.
Yeah, like, totally. It's one of the things that I loved working with you the most is because you did share those things and you didn't, you know, I think that there is a mindset in the wellness world that like you just want to be, if you teach someone or coach someone, that you have it all figured out.
You have to be the expert. Like right. I'm the expert.
And you are an expert though, Jessica. Like you do like really understand attachment theory and like people benefit from your services and your work. But at the same time, to act like you still aren't doing your own work it's not true. It's not true because you're just, you know, at that point, I think maybe your ego has taken over because you probably should be doing some work continually. And just like, I don't know, I want to learn from people who are willing to be vulnerable and who are willing to admit that they're just figuring this out too. And maybe I've learned a couple things along the way that feel like really strong pillars and I can now share them with people. But at a certain point, I'm sort of tired of people just saying like, oh, okay, like this is it. Like, this is like, it's just, I really believe this and this sounds like kind of depressing, but I don't think we ever fully arrive. Like, I don't think we ever fully like, and I think it can feel depressing because that's so much of what we want is to like, be like, okay, I am with the perfect partner. I have like the perfect job. But once you let go of that, it takes so much pressure. It's like, okay, I'm figuring this out. And like, what's left is what's possible, right? Mm-hmm. It's like so much possibility if you're not focused on just arriving
at the result. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it goes back to that like perfectionism concept, right? Where it's like, do you really want to, I mean, speaking for me and you, because I feel like we both agree on this, where I don't want to work with someone who represents this perfect person because, like, first of all, we're all so unique and different, but that's like impossible. That's an impossible state of mind and outcome. So yeah, so I always appreciate just vulnerability and like humanness, like just show me humanness so I can not feel so ashamed of my daily experiences, you know? Yeah. So yeah, I appreciate you saying that a lot because yeah, I think that that's a kind of a big problem nowadays with like all these gurus and leader, like spiritual leaders and just leaders in general, where it's like, all right, guys, well, I guess everyone's just good and gravy all the time and like never suffering ever.
Yeah, no, this suffering is part of the process. Yeah. It's part. That's life. And like accepting it is sort of just the work. It doesn't mean you need to be miserable all the time, mm-hmm. but it does mean that you can let go of this idea that when things aren't 100% the way that you think they should be, that it's mm-hmm. You're still okay. Like yeah. you're still okay.
Yeah. There's this beautiful, I don't know if we actually talked about this, but there's this beautiful therapy approach. It's called mindful self-compassion. I don't know if we touched on
mindful. I don't know if we did.
Okay. Well, here we go.
here we go.
But it's this beautiful approach and it's mindful self-compassion. And it acknowledges that, it acknowledges that we're in pain, right? That we experience pain. We can be mindful of that pain, but also acknowledging our common humanity. So it consists of mindfulness, right? The awareness piece, and then acknowledging common humanity that all of us humans suffer. We all suffer to some extent. And then self-kindness, showing yourself compassion for mm-hmm. when you fall short, for your flaws, for your imperfections. So I love that. There's a book on it too. I forget what the author's name is. There's two authors to that book, but, and since you are into mindfulness and yoga, that would be a really cool,
I'm writing it down.
Yeah. Mindful self-compassion. Yeah, girl. Okay. So what's another question I wanted to ask you? So we were working together for about 2 months or so, and just doing this attachment work for yourself, you're so introspective. I know I tell you that so many times, but it sounds like you're just always trying to learn and discover new areas of yourself and where you can grow and expand. How do you feel like you've, because again, this is lifetime work. Like it is lifetime work. But within these couple of months, where do you feel like you have just changed a little bit, maybe perspectives, maybe just how you feel about yourself in general? Where do you feel like you've changed a little bit?
Yeah, I feel like the biggest thing for me has been, I feel like I understand what it means to be a secure person, and I feel like I actually believe that that person is in me. Like I actually believe that that is possible for me. And so like the practical ways that that shows up is I feel so much more self-confident than I did before, of just trying new things, of meeting new people. I feel like I just am more compassionate towards myself and towards other people. And I also think, I feel like I felt a lot of pressure around dating, like, 'cause I felt so much like I didn't know what I was doing. And now I'm like, I've come to the realization that I'm not a completely flawed human being. And a lot of that negative self-talk, honestly, like it shows up, but you teach some pretty good tools for letting go of it. And that's been huge for me too, to the point where not that you want to like tell other people when they're doing it, but just like in a loving, compassionate way. Yeah. Like I had somebody who was in conversation say to me, like, I'm the worst. And my immediate
reaction, I know.
Is that true?
True.
flew out of my mouth. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Like this is really, like, it's really ingrained in me. And the person was like, oh, well, you know, first, but maybe top 10. And I was like, is that true?
Is that true? Like, can you absolutely know that?
And so I feel like my, I don't know, I just feel clearer on who I am and clearer on my own sense of self. And I feel like that impacts just not how I want to show up in a romantic relationship, but just how I show up in my life for everything. Like it's all related. Like that was the eye-opening thing. It was like, I thought I was going into this coaching program to like figure out like how to fix relationships, but actually I was going into it to like learn more about myself and to have more compassion of myself for myself to really impact every area of my life. Cause it's just, it's all interrelated. I mean, I can only speak how it is for me, but that's how it shows up for me. Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I think you just like summed that up so perfectly, because when we think of secure attachment style, say you're just learning about this stuff, again, you have this idea of like this perfect, secure, confident person who just has no insecurity in the world. And that's like far from what this is all about. And what I really stress on teaching and helping people understand is that security is about accepting your humanity, understanding your humanity, and learning how to just love yourself in the process, because your relationship to self is what gets projected into everything. It's what you see in others. It's what you attract in others. So if you're feeling good and healthy and safe within yourself, you're going to, as a result, attract these new, healthier experiences into your life. So it all starts with how you feel about yourself.
It's so true. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. You know, and if you have avoidance, you know, you're not going to be as quickly to write people off because of their flaws, because they're like, wait a second, I accept my flaws. So let me give you a chance. Like you have other aspects of yourself. Or if you're too anxious, you know, you'll have more self-worth and you'll know what you're willing to tolerate, what you're not willing to tolerate, and what you deserve. So it really, it's all about, I didn't record this when you talked about it, but like you said that your word for this upcoming year is worthy, right?
Yeah. For 2021.
So, you know, that's really what it's all about. Secure attachment.
It is.
Worthiness. Yeah. Cultivating that within yourself and knowing that you're human and you're going to fuck up and you're going to make mistakes and you're going to have flaws. And that's perfectly okay, because that's the gray area. We're in the gray area, you guys. That's security. It's knowing how to navigate the gray.
That's it. Yeah.
So thank you for explaining that just so eloquently. I'm sure that just probably resonated with a lot of people. So if you could give any advice, one piece of advice or two, on, you know, someone who, you know, they're experiencing this insecure attachment style and they want some hope or just something that they can take with them to become more secure, to feel more secure, what would you suggest?
Yeah, it's not a small question. I think the biggest thing for me, I'm trying to think back to how I felt before I started doing this work. I think one of the biggest things that's important to realize is that you are not alone in this. Like you, because it can feel like such a, what is wrong with me? Like,
yes,
I just need it. Like there's so much shame. Mm-hmm. And it's like, recognize that like you're not alone in this, and that the work that needs to be done can feel daunting, but at the same time, you start somewhere, and with especially the help and guidance of someone like you, Jessica, it can make it feel a lot less daunting. Mm-hmm. It can make it feel like, okay, like I have someone that I can lean on. I have someone that has done this before, that has heard this from other people. and is going to help me, you know, believe what I think is true of everyone, which is that you are worthy, like that you have this inner sense and this inner anchor that is no one can take that from you. No one can take that from you. And once you get to that point where you can recognize that, you know, the world just kind of opens up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I would say.
The possibilities. Like,
yeah, the possibility. Earlier. Yeah.
I
I'm big
that.
Into thinking about what's possible. So
yeah, me too.
Yeah, we were joking that I think my word for 2020 was possible, like before in January, before the pandemic started. And then everything happened. I was like, why did I pick that word? Like, what? I had no idea. But even through all of that, which I'm sure has been challenging for people, especially in relationships, it's still important to recognize that, like, okay, when everything in the world is unstable, how do I still can I still come back to myself and see that as an anchor that I'm not going to lose? Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about the gray space, right?
Just
all that uncertainty, being that anchor for yourself, like one of the most important things you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's amazing. Well, thank you again so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening, and don't forget to check out My Secure Self Academy for the Fearful Avoidant Attachment Style. The link is in the show notes. I will catch you guys on the next episode.